Have you ever fallen in love? Love at first sight? I have in the last couple of days here with a little lady who, of course, is Sister White's granddaughter. Sister Jacques, as you will agree with me after listening to her, is a... What do you say about a woman like her? Just a jewel, bless her little heart. She just radiates joy. Yesterday, as we were down at Elmshaven and listened to her and talked with her, everybody came away just saying, her faith radiates, and it really does. She just really loves the Lord, and we're real happy for the privilege of having her and her brother, both of whom were, of course, she particularly closely associated with Sister White, where her brother here was not, he was only a little youngster at the time, didn't get acquainted as well. I've always, of course, loved the spirit of prophecy. I say always. I was brought up in a divided home. My mother was a Roman Catholic and my father was a Baptist. My mother ultimately became a Seventh-day Adventist. But we never knew what the spirit of prophecy was as young boys. I didn't really learn much about the spirit of prophecy until I got in the army. And then began to read and read and read, and I've never stopped reading the spirit of prophecy since. I love it. And next to the Bible, there's nothing more precious. Frankly, I haven't got time to read what the great commentators of earth have to say. I have only time to read what God has given to us with inspired writing. What a blessing to belong to a people to have the only inspired commentary on the Bible in the entire world. We ought to be taking advantage of it. But I love the spirit of prophecy. I love anything that has to do with it, and I love the family of Ellen White. They're just fantastic people. I've had your brother Herbert in our home, of course, and I know Arthur White also, and we're real happy for the privilege of having Sister Jacques here. While serving as pastor of the Battle Creek Tabernacle, which, of course, has a lot of history, where Ellen White also had lived for a number of years, there was a little house there that they had built on Wood Street. You've seen that, I'm sure, and been there. And at the Tabernacle, we purchased that home. It had been out of Adventist hands for a number of years. And we made a little museum out of it for people to visit, just as Elmshaven is down here over the hill. And while pastoring at the Tabernacle, it was a large church, of course, and almost was impossible, really, to get away from people in order to study. And so you know what I did? I used to go up there in that little room where Ellen White did her writing, and I made that my study. I slipped over there and many a time would just go in there and use that as a place where I could get away from everybody and study the spirit of prophecy. But today, we're real happy to have the privilege of having Sister Jacques with us, and we're going to ask her to speak to us whatever is on her heart about Ellen White, her work, her life, human interest stories, and then we're going to open it up for questions from you. So be thinking what you would like to ask someone who knows firsthand more about Ellen White than any person walking on the earth, presumably. Sister Jacques, we're real happy to have you with us here this morning, and we know that you'll be a blessing to us. I'd like to tie this around your neck here, though.
Okay. Then I won't have to hold it.
That's right. Okay.
Ellen White all her life spoke without any of these gadgets. But I guess they're good. And this little room that you went to study.
Yep.
That's where Ellen White wrote the first controversy.
Right, that's right.
She had seen what I call the drama of the ages two times. Once when she was a young woman, I think maybe even before she was married, and then again 10 years later when they were visiting, going from one church to another, visiting and comforting the people that had been disappointed. In the schoolhouse, of all places, where, and it was a funeral, and she was showing the drama of the ages a second time. Now, why the Lord chose that place, I'm sure I don't know. There was a young man, they didn't even know whether he was a Christian, lying there, ready to be buried, and it was in the schoolhouse. They had heard that there was a pastor in town, and they said, would you conduct the funeral service? And Elder James White said, yes, he would. And not knowing anything about the person, he talked about what the Lord has prepared for those that love him. And they enjoyed it. And then, as the custom was, or their custom, Ellen and James' custom, he'd say, Ellen, do you have something that you'd like to say? She always insisted that he speak first. He was the head of the house. He was the one that would speak first. She said, yes. And so she went on enlarging upon what he had been talking about, the new earth and what the Lord has in store for those that love him. And right while she was in the middle of the telling about the new earth, she was taken in vision. Glory. 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 She would say three times. And then she was in vision. Now, the people didn't know, but James White knew, and he said, Ellen is in vision. The Lord is speaking to her. And you know those people, many of them, not Adamus, just sat in trance that whole time watching. Her movements were graceful. Her eyes were looking at something interesting they could see. And there she was given the second view of what I call the drama of the ages. And as they were going home, because they were on their way home then, they had been traveling by train. They had left the little boys with either Grandpa or Grandma Harmon or Grandpa and Grandma White. They were both grandparents' sets were living in Battle Creek at that time, so they could leave them with their grandparents. And Ellen,
one on each side of the house.
Is that it?
They have a little lean-to on each side.
I didn't realize that. Thank you. Well, she'd say, now you obey your grandparents and don't wait for them to tell you to do things. You see what needs to be done and you do it. And you be real comfort to your grandparents. Well, they were on their way home. And evidently, one of Satan's emissaries heard James and Ellen talking that they were, as soon as she got home, she'd start writing out what she had been shown. And the devil didn't want that to happen. He didn't want her to write what she had been shown in vision. And when they got to the Palmer's house, and it's not too far, about 9 miles, if I remember correctly, from Battle Creek, and she stepped into the house of this friend, you know, see their friends before they finally returned home. Why, Ellen White just fell like one dead on the floor. Now, she was too young for a stroke. But there she was, prostrate on the floor. And James picked her up. He was a big 6 foot more person. And she was a little tiny thing, 5 foot 2. And the young woman, very slight. He picked her up and put her on the couch. And he said, pray for Ellen. It looks like she's dying. So they gathered around the couch where they had put her. And they prayed very earnestly, first one and then another, that the Lord would spare her life. Well, pretty soon she did move a little. She was able to move some, her limbs a little, and the prayer was answered that her life was spared. But she was not strengthened now. Satan tried many times to hinder her work, and many times when she was healed instantaneously so she could go right on with her lecturing or whatever was her program. But this time she did not gain strength. And she thought, will I ever see my little boys again? She just wanted to see her little boys. And they decided finally that if she wasn't going to be restored to normal health at once, that they would go home and be near the boys while she recovered. You know, the Lord doesn't do things twice the same way. And this time she was not healed immediately. So they went home. And she still felt, I must start writing that out. I must start writing it out. But she wasn't strong enough. So finally she asked her pen and paper and wrote one page and was exhausted writing one page. The next day, well, I think she had to rest more than one day that first time. Then she got so she could write a page a day. And as she went on by faith, the Lord strengthened her gradually. And one letter she wrote to one of her friends, I've written 14 pages today. Quite an accomplishment. She was real proud of it. That was the first little controversy. She didn't start with the fall. So, the history and the order. She started with controversy. She said, our people must know Satan's plans about the time of the end. So when my father was about 8 years old, that was published, that first little controversy. And it was written in that room where you went to study. Right. Another time she wrote to her friend, this is just a little homey thing. She said, I've rugged the stairs, those little steep stairs. Well, she put rugging on it. You know, little boy's feet running up and down. It would sound better with a rug on it. But she was very good. She was a good seamstress. She made the little boys' suits and even their caps when she was a younger woman. So she was shown in a subsequent vision that at this time when she fell in the Palmer home, that was Satan's effort to prevent her writing the conflict series. He didn't want it written. And you know, it's 5 volumes now. And I think if every one of us would read it through, right from Patriarchs and Prophets right down through, even young people would enjoy it. You get an idea of God's plan for this whole world and for us better than any other way. If it took you even 8 years, it would be worth it to read it straight through and get in your mind God's plan for this poor little dark earth that has cost him so much. Now, people ask me when they come to Elms Haven, oh, you're Ellen White's granddaughter. Oh, which boy was your father? So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the family. This is a little prelude.
Excuse me, before you continue, is there anyone that knows how to cut off the air conditioning? Some folk have complained that it's too cool and we haven't been able to find a way to put it down. If there's anyone that does know, we'd appreciate your cutting it down.
Turning it down a little bit.
Thank you. Turn the heat up. The air conditioning.
Yes.
No,
that's freezing
no
cold.
No control on that one.
Well, Ellen White had 4 boys, no girls, just one pattern. The first one was born in 1847, and they named him Henry. And they were very happy with their little child, but they were very poor. They did not have a home. They had no security. James had spent all his money a few years before in literature to prepare people for the second coming of Christ, like Joseph Bates, the captain that was wealthy, sold everything to print literature to prepare people for the coming of Jesus Christ. And the 2,300 days, then the sanctuary will be cleansed. And they figured out just when that would happen. And Jesus was coming then, they were sure. The prophecy was right, no question. But their understanding of the event was not. And what a terrible disappointment they had. And Ellen and James went through that. And many others. And it was a traumatic affair. Very hard on them. To the disappointment that Jesus had not come. Now they had to go on in this old world. Some more. Live some more here and do things. And so they started as a family project. The Review and Herald and the Youth Instructor. Our literature work was started as a home project under hardship, privation. James White mowed hay for what? Was it 75 cents an acre or something like that? Very little money. And it cost to buy paper and it cost to have things printed. But that's the way it started, as a home project. He was sometime discouraged, but Ellen was shown that it would be a success. It would be small beginning, but it would finally succeed. So he took courage and they went along, sacrificing things that they wanted themselves or that might probably needed for the publishing work. Now, they set up housekeeping and did the best they could in upstairs apartments. I think after a few months or a few years, that James gave her an allowance. Because she had a means of saving something. She was a very, very careful person. Don't waste anything. And neighbors would give them vegetables, maybe things and forth for them. And if she didn't spend the money, she didn't give it back to James. She had a back of the cupboard door, a long black stocking. Now, he didn't know it was there. And any change that she had, now whether it was the end of a week or end of a month, I wish she told us more. I don't know. But anything that she had left over, she put in that stocking. Now, I think when she started, she wanted to save for a horse and carriage. But I may be mistaken in that. That's just my notion, because they needed a horse and carriage very much. But they were printing this paper, Review and Herald and Instructor, and they needed a shipment of paper. And it would cost $60, and James did not have the $60. And like all husbands, he talked about it. When he'd come home to dinner, he'd talk about it, or when he was home. If he just had, to have, I think it was $63. Anyway, it was around $60. Well, she thought of the stocking, you know. And then she thought of what she wanted to get with what was in that stocking, and she didn't say something right away. But eventually, he kept talking about it till she couldn't take it any longer. So she said, well, wait a minute, James. And she went in and opened the door, brought out this bumpy stocking. Heavy, too. So she spilled it out on the table, and they sorted out 50-cent pieces and quarters and dimes and nickels and piled them up. How much was in it? And it was 60-some dollars. Imagine that. And she says, well, it's yours, James. Oh, Ellen, he says, that's wonderful. How did you manage to save that? He had no idea how she could save that much money. Now, how long she took saving it, I don't know. We're not told that. Maybe quite a while. But as I said in the other group, the brothers and sisters where they were, the Adventists, realized that James and Ellen needed a conveyance of their own. And they gave them a present of a nice buggy, new harness, and a horse. Well, that horse took them all around to different places. And they went one real long journey to a group. And when they got there, they said, Brother and Sister White, that's too expensive a buggy for you to have. You should not have such an expensive horse and buggy. You should give that. Well, it had been a present to them. But you know how critical people are? That buggy was too nice for Ellen and James White. People are the same nowadays. It's interesting, isn't it? Well, they were grateful that they had the horse and buggy because they didn't have to go then in the smoke-laden stagecoaches, and they didn't have to go in the packets where the men smoked on the canals or in the boats on the ocean from place to place. So they had that. Well, before they got this horse and buggy, they had now two children, two little boys. Henry, and when he was 2 years old, Edson was born in 1849. And they took him with them more. Once in a while, they left him with someone. And once when they came back, the poor little fellow hadn't had the proper care. They'd promised to take good care of him, and it just about broke Ellen's heart. He wasn't well, so after that, he was even sick when she started out with him in the horse and buggy for a trip. And they said, oh, if you take him, he'll die. Well, she said, he'll die if I leave him here, too. So she took him along. And he got well on the trip. When he came back, he was quite husky. So he went with them after that quite a bit. I wouldn't say they never left him with anybody. And when they got to Battle Creek, they did leave them with the grandparents. And they did have a woman come and stay in the home by the name of Adelia Patton. And she was with them 5 years, and they learned to love her very much. They had no daughters of their own. And she was with them when the oldest boy died. And she wrote one chapter in the little book that's about Henry and his death, this Adelia Patton. Well, just 10 years after the disappointment, my father arrived, 1854. They had not gone to Battle Creek yet. They had bought a printing press, and they were publishing, instead of taking the manuscript out, whatever it was, to the printer, they printed it themselves. They bought an old big printing press, and they had it in the house, and they printed the review and the instructor right in their own home. That was in Rochester, New York. They rented a house, It was big enough for the press and their living, and that saved money, you see, to have both the things in the same place. But this little Willie was a lively little rascal, and he learned to walk by the time he was 9 months old. Well, you don't have too good judgment when you're 9 months old, do you? No, and he was walking around, and there was a girl helping the Whites, because there was so much the Ellen White fed the helpers that worked in the press, and so she couldn't do all the work alone. So there was a lady helping them, a girl helping them, and she was washing some jars for something. And Ellen was in the other room, I guess, writing, and the girl was working around, and this little bitty fellow was poking something around in this tub. And he lost his balance and fell in head first down in that tub of water. And the girl heard blub, blub, you know, bubbles coming up. And she looked around, there were the two little feet sticking up. And the baby was down in the tub of water. Well, she jerked him out and screamed. And Ellen White came and she says, was the water hot or cold? That's the first thing she asked. Well, I think it was cold. So she took the baby out and she shook him and she rolled him and on the lawn, and then she shook him again, and she rubbed his arms, and the neighbors came and said, James White came in the excitement too, you see what it was all about, and they said, oh, take that dead child away from her. That's terrible, let her have that dead child like that. Take it away from her. He says, leave her alone, that child is hers. So he wouldn't let them touch him, and pretty soon he opened his eyes. She rubbed him and shook him, and finally he opened his eyes and smiled. Well, that was my father that put me around. We're glad they shook him enough times. Then 6 years later, the little Herbert was born. And so now there were four little boys in the family. And she wanted a rocking chair to rock this baby in, to hold the baby and rock him. So she asked James to get her a rocking chair. Well, people came and saw this nice rocking chair. They said, you shouldn't have spent so much money on a rocking chair. That's too expensive, a rocking chair. So he took it back and got a cheaper one, but it was comfortable too. So sometimes it seemed, no matter what they did or didn't do, there was somebody that said, you shouldn't have done it. But that they had to meet all through their life. Well, Ellen thought, now with four little boys, the Lord surely won't expect me to go from place to place. I can sit be at home. Surely you won't expect me to go now. But you know, she would be shown in vision, something's going on in this church, some extreme stand or something off the, well, a tangent, if you understand what I mean in geometry, somebody going off on a tangent. And it just burned in her bones. She just, like the prophet said, it just burned in her. She just felt, we just have to go, James. I have to go and help those people. Or we have to go. They went together. We'll take the baby with us and we'll leave the boys with the grandparents or with this Adelia. One or the other. I don't know which it was. So they took him. And in those days they were entertained in the homes. People would then give them a place to sleep and give them a place to eat. And they went from place to place. And in those days they felt it was not good to have too much sunlight in the bedroom or too much night air either. You know, they had pretty funny ideas back there, some of them. And evidently in this place where they stayed, somebody had been there before that had erysipelas. Now, we don't see that very much anymore. It's a very rare disease now. It's of the head, the skin and the flesh of the head. Very painful. Well, Ellen and James didn't know who had been there, and evidently the lady had not hung the blankets out in the sunshine. So finally they said, well, James and Ellen said, we'll go on home and you stay home with the baby and I'll go to these other few churches that they had planned to visit. So Ellen went home with the baby and was home with their other boys. And James had a funny dream when he was visiting a place over here. He dreamed he was at home and he saw the baby with a swollen head. Well, he immediately went home. He felt that was a warning. And sure enough, when he got home, there was that poor little baby with a big swollen head. They didn't know what to do for it in those days, the doctors. It was very painful, and the child died at 2 months and 20 days. Well, it wasn't very much, well, a little while, a few months after that, they lost their oldest. So they lost their youngest and then the oldest. So she knew what sorrow was. She lost their sweet singer. And that was away from home. The boys got restless, always, about being left. And so James and Ellen said, we're going to take you boys with us this time. And we're going to go and visit some of our friends. And we'll stay a while. You come with us. So the boys went, the three. They lost the little one. And they were singing then. The oldest one was a good musician. And he sang beautifully. And Edson sang too. And Willie joined in some, although he was not musical like his brothers. They could both play, but my father couldn't play a note. You know, we're all made different. That wasn't his talent. But he sang with them. They sang a trio. And they'd sing at the stations when their folks went a little farther away and left them with his family for a few days. Why, they sang as the train pulled in and came out. They would sing on the platform together. Well, in this home where they were staying, there was a river nearby and a logging business. You know, they float logs down the river. And James and Ellen realized that rolling logs were not a safe place for little boys. And they said to the boys, don't go near the logs. Don't go near the river. Don't go in the river. Well, that looked pretty interesting to Henry. And he thought he'd like to jump from log to log. You know, and he was pretty quick and he could jump. And I don't know whether Edson tried it too, but they all knew they were disobeying. And I guess Willie just looked on. I don't know that part. But Edson got his legs wet. And of course, he didn't tell his folks when he got home that he got his legs wet because they told him not to do that. See? And he was helping his father make charts. I used to have big charts of the image of Daniel, too. And they were painting these charts, and the boys were quite artistic, and they were helping their father make these charts. And, of course, Henry was tired. After he'd painted a while, he rolled up one of the charts and lay down on the floor and had took a nap. Well, it was in a place where there was a draft, and his legs being wet, and his head on a chart that wasn't too dry from the painting, he got pneumonia, or they called it lung fever. And he got pretty sick. They did what they could for him, but they didn't know then. They had no penicillin or antibiotics like we have now. He didn't even have hydrotherapy. And he saw he was going to die. It was a sad time. He told his parents to go in a room by themselves and each pray for him. But then he confessed. You see, he'd been disobeying. And he'd been leading the other boys to disobey. And it was a serious thing to disobey, you see. Not that the log jumping was so bad, but the disobedience was bad. So he confessed and made it right. And said he was sorry that he had influenced the other boys to disobey. And he was ready to go, but he said, please bury me, my little brother. So they took him to Battle Creek, and he is buried by his little brother. They're in the family plot. They had already bought that plot because James White knew that the grandparents would eventually go unless the Lord came. So he bought this big plot, and that's where they're all buried. And that's where Ellen White is buried. Now, people say, well, why didn't you bury her here? Well, it didn't cost any more to take her to Battle Creek and put her in the plot that was there and only just one main stone and the rest just little headstones than to buy a plot here. So they took her to Battle Creek. They wanted it. Battle Creek wanted her to come anyway, your people. And my mother died about 9 years ago, and she's buried there. But there's one more place, and I don't think anybody will be put there. I don't think any of us will be put there. I don't care. I just should be buried under an oak tree. Because it doesn't matter where you're buried, but it's kind of a nice idea for the relatives that it's a family plot. So they took Henry home and buried him by his little brother. So that left the two,
just Edson and Willie. And they both became ministers. They both were instrumental in publishing work. My father, at the age of 20, was manager of the Pacific Press when it was in Oakland. Edson started the Southern Publishing Association. Printing, publishing was right in their blood, you see. They couldn't help it. And so they both had interesting lives. But Edson didn't have any children. So which one do we belong to? We belong to Willie. And he had 7. He made up for what Edson didn't do. So we had a very happy time. And my father was a prince. He was like his mother, very good-natured. We were brought up with smiles and approbation. We were asked to do many things. Grandmother said, anything that needs to be done is honorable to do. And we were asked to do jobs, and we were asked with a smile, and we were expected to do it with a smile. No grumbling. Frankie, no grumbling. So we had a real good time. I don't remember Australia. The twins, now let's see, you want to know about the WCY family? He married a Battle Creek girl that Dr. Kellogg was in love with. And my dad got her. Well, they were asked to go to Switzerland, and they studied French. They were going to help with the publishing work in Switzerland. And so when grandmother went to Europe, my father went with her because her husband had died in 1881. He died at the age of 60. You know, that's not very old. I don't know how to adjust my thinking, but next year my son will be as old as James White was when he died. He'll be 60 next year, but he doesn't look as old as James White looked. I think James White burned the candle at both ends. He did too much. And they didn't know how to live. It was young people. They didn't live properly, really. They didn't seem to think that what you ate had any difference to do with, well, what shall I say, your spiritual experience, as we understand now. So they weren't very healthy as young people. Ellen White thought she had to have meat at least twice a day for strength. And she just loved things that were smothered in vinegar. Her lettuce, and even in cooking sometimes. And this trip that they went with the boys this time was in 1863, and it's when she was away from home on this trip where Henry died that she was given the vision on healthful living. And it was so far away from what she'd been doing that it was quite something. And when she got home, she said to Adelia, this girl had been with them and was with them all together 5 years, now we're going to have entire wheat bread, and we're not going to have any meat. We're going to cook vegetables, and we're not going to have any vinegar. Well, Adelia complied, of course, with what Ellen wanted, and the boys and Grandpa came to the table, and after the blessing, they went ahead and ate, but it just didn't look good to Ellen. Where's the big platter of white biscuits? She didn't like that black bread. Where's the vinegar for the lettuce? No, nowhere. Where's the meat? Nothing but garden stuff? Oh, no. So she excused herself from the table. She didn't eat a bite. Just didn't look good. So different. And you know, that's the hardest thing to change, your eating habits. The hardest thing to change. And it was so different than what she was used to. So the next meal she came to the table and they asked the blessing and she left again without eating. And the next day the same, and she said, you can put her hands like this, you can just wait till you can eat that good food. So eventually she learned to like it. And her health improved. All their health improved. It just would, you know. So it was quite interesting, but you know the worst? The meat wasn't so bad, but to give up the vinegar was harder for her than giving up the meat. She just liked that sour on her food. But vinegar's not good for you. And then, wait, I never had anything with vinegar, and the smell of it I thought was terrible. We made our own mayonnaise. We used lemon juice instead of vinegar, you see, when I I made the mayonnaise lots of times for the white family, beating the oil, you know, and then the lemon juice. But she missed the vinegar. Well, not for years, but right away she had quite a time of it. And I remember that she liked tomatoes. She liked acid things, you see, not too much sweets. She would have tomatoes either cooked or raw almost every day. And another thing she ate every day, in my memory, was greens. They've cooked, and you know, there's a time of year when the greens don't grow very big in the garden, and the mustard comes up early in the spring. Well, as I told you, we all had tasks that we did, and when that time of year, when the mustard starts up like broccoli, you know, and there's little smooth leaves each side, she didn't eat the rough leaves at the bottom. But I had to pick enough of those little bitsy leaves that grew up on the stem for grandmother, but I didn't have to do enough for the whole family. But grandmother had her little dish of greens. And I remember once they invited her to dinner here at the college, and Miss McIntyre, who was always trying to, you know, do what mother wanted, brought up a dish of greens. She wasn't sure they'd have greens that day at the college. So she brought a dish of greens, and she brought it in on the table and put it down by ground. Oh, grandmother said, Sarah, you needn't have done that. But she wanted to be sure that grandmother had her greens. So she was very fond of, as I say, anything with tomatoes. And she liked macaroni and tomatoes baked. And we also used a lot of dried corn. The farm here raised nice corn, and we'd dry sacks. I mean, it would be sacks before we dried it, of corn. We boiled it in big wash boilers for about 10 minutes, and then we had what we call scratchers, and it was like a hand, and it scratched down the kernels, about four kernels at once. Then we took the back of a knife and just pressed it, and it jumped out like little pearls. You see, it was cooked. And that was delicious. We made corn soup. And we made something like, you know, macaroni and cheese. Well, we made corn and macaroni. We used the eggs, the fresh eggs from the hens that we had. And you beat the eggs up, and we soaked the corn and boiled it up so it wasn't hard anymore, because dried corn gets pretty tough. We'd soak it up and then bake it like you would macaroni and cheese. And it's delicious. It's as nice as can be. What other thing did we like? Oh, we had gems about twice a day. Now, I don't know where somebody told me about a recipe of gems, and I never heard any of that kind of a recipe. Just flour and water. I never heard anything like that. We had gems twice a day made in these hot gem pans, big iron gem pans. It was something, the idea of waffles, only a not such a rich dough. And it was made thinner, so you could pour it from a pitcher. And it was, this is about the proportions. Of course, it makes a difference in your flour and whatnot, but this was about it. To a cup of flour, a cup of milk, a level tablespoonful of oil, a little salt, and a little sugar. And then you either use cornmeal and white flour, or entire wheat and a little white flour, or entire wheat. And you put to this proportion one egg to one cup. And you put the yolk in the batter. And you beat the whites separate. We didn't use any baking powder, but we beat the whites separate. And whenever we started the egg beater, the canary in the kitchen would sing. Sing away when we'd run the egg beater. Well, then you fold this egg white, just fold it in, see? And then take this pitcher and take them out of the oven, these hot gem irons, and sizzle, 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 you fill them all up, and then put them in the oven quick, and then they puffed right up like a muffin. We had those about twice a week. And I remember I used to like to bite the end off and fill it up with cream. Ah, cream doesn't go now. We mustn't eat cream now. But that's what we did. Did you ever do that? Bite the end off and fill it up with cream? No. Oh, yeah. An interesting time. She served a very nice table, very adequate. Mealtime was a pleasant time. You didn't discuss food at the meal. You ate what was provided with thanksgiving. And the cook had to think about what was good for you and cook a good meal. And they presented it in a nice, attractive way. And people loved to eat at grandmother's house or our house. And we had plenty of them to eat. And do you know, of all those years of people coming and staying, only one person thought of leaving something. And one man always left $5 on the bureau. And it was thankful you received. Because you can't entertain a lot of people with a big family and not have it count up. You know? But this one man always thought and left $5. The rest was gratis. I guess they thought, oh, that has a big place, they have lots of money, but we didn't. There was a food factory by us. They made lots of things. We couldn't very often afford to buy the nut foods. We had to be careful. But we had lots of good things to eat from the garden. We made our own cutlets, gluten cutlets. And they were better than what you buy. We also made our own, baked our own, kind of like a nutina. We take the peanut butter and mix it with tomato juice and a little bit of starch and a couple of eggs and put it in the tins that we'd bought nut food in. We took cut it off so that it was smooth and we'd fill these tins up and put them in a big baking pan, the base in a water so they wouldn't burn, and made our own nut food. And it sliced just as nice as what we bought. So we learned to do lots of things and had a very happy time growing up there. One of the first things... Oh, I was going to tell you about my family. I didn't get past Ella and Mabel. Got stuck on Mabel, didn't I? Ella and Mabel were born... Ella was born before they went to Switzerland, and Mabel was born in Switzerland. And she is now 92 years old in Loma Linda. She's in a nursing home. She's quite helpless. But she was born in Switzerland. And then of all places in the world to get tuberculosis, my father's May got tuberculosis in Switzerland. And in those days, they did not know what to do for tuberculosis. When they came back to Battle Creek and they took her to Dr. Keller to examine her, he just cried. He knew she could not live. And she didn't. She died when Mabel was about 2 years old. They prayed for her. And she said, Mother, why doesn't the Lord heal me? But he didn't. So, she said, is it something I'm not doing? Or something I've done wrong? And grandmother said, no. We don't know. The Lord doesn't always tell us why. You know? We ask why, but the Lord doesn't tell us why. So there, my father was left with two little girls without a mother. And when they asked grandmother to go to Australia, one was... Well, that's when they went to Australia. They were just young children. They were in the care of a Miss Mortensen. And Dr. Kelly said, I'll watch after them. They had no idea how long they were going to be gone in Australia. The Lord didn't tell Ellen White everything. She didn't know how long she was going to be gone. She left the little girls with this Mary Mortensen, and Dr. Kellogg says, I'll watch over them. And he did. Well, they went to Australia, and wherever grandmother went, she influenced our people to start schools and health institutions. How much time do I have? Is it about time to quit?
No. I think we'd like to listen to all day. Is there anyone that wants her to quit?
No.
Good answer.
Well, they started a school. And before Ellen White had gone to Australia, Elder Israel and Elder Baker had gone to Australia and started the work. And they had gone down, you know that little island, that little drop down below Australia, Tasmania? Well, there was an English family living in Tasmania. He had been in the government service in India and got too warm there, and so he wanted a cool place to live, to retire, and he went to Tasmania. And he had three girls and a boy. Well, when Elder Israel and Elder Baker and those came down to Tasmania, this man, Lacey was his name, was going to town to a lodge meeting. And he didn't know anything about the meetings, the Adventist meetings, but he asked somebody, where's the meeting going to be tonight? And they told him where the Adventist meeting was going to be, not where the lodge meeting was going to be. So he went there, and my legs, what did he see? Old crazy animals and and giants, pictures of, and my, you've never seen anything like that. So they were, of course, talking about Daniel, the prophecies, and he was very much interested. So he came every night to the meetings. They lived out quite a ways, but he walked in, but his wife was not well, and she didn't come in. But he bought the book from Daniel and Revelation for her, and she read it at home while he went to the lectures and listened. And when they got through, the whole family became Seventh-day Adventists. Well, now that they have a school in Australia, somebody said, you should send your children to our school in Australia. Well, now the boy was too far along, and he came clear to the United States, to Healdsburg. But the three girls went to our school in, Coonabong. No, that wasn't where it started. It was in the city, and I can't think of the name now. So they sent their three girls. Well, then when they did have the school where it is located now, or moved there from St. Kilda Road, where it was first, they moved to where the school was built, and these three girls moved there too. And Ellen White had bought 60 acres right next to the school to encourage them. And W.C. White saw these three lovely English girls, and he thought, he'd been alone, I don't know how many years, 5 or 6 years, 7. He thought, wouldn't this oldest English girl make a nice mother for my girls? He thought that would be a good idea. And then he could have the girls with him. So he said, well, we'll have to get acquainted with her a little better. I don't know how the girl would stand all this company all the time. We have to see how she would react to all this steady stream of company. So they went to the school and said, Miss Lacey, would you please come? One of our helpers isn't very well. Would you come and work in the home this summer? Well, she said, I plan to sell controversy and send the money to my brother. Well, they said, we'll compensate so you can help your brother if you want to. So she went to the home. Yes, she said, I'd be glad to work in Ellen White's home. And so she did. Now, W.C. White was watching her, but she didn't know it. She just did her work faithfully and enjoyed Ellen White so much. She not only helped with the cooking, but she gave Ellen White hydrotherapy treatment. She was having a little trouble with, was it arthritis or something? Neuritis. Anyway, she would give her a salt glow twice a week. And what was the other? Cold mitten friction of the other days. And so she did that too. And in the evening, Ellen White would sit down on a stool, and May would brush her hair. It seemed to rest grandmother to have her hair brushed. Now, it wasn't me. I don't want anybody to touch one of my hairs. But she enjoyed that. So she worked in the home, and there was a family from Africa wanted to see the Wessels family. Did you ever hear of the Wessels family that had diamonds in Africa? Did you ever hear of that family? And they had their windmill stopped going on Sabbath even. Well, they had given to the school, I don't know how many hundred pounds. And where your money is, there your heart is also. And they wanted to see the school. So they came, old Grandma Wessels and the young couple and their two children. And they stayed right with Ellen White. And they drove around to see the school. And May Lacey was driving him. And the two of the horses, you know, horses have likes and dislikes. The ones that were left, not being used, were two horses that didn't like each other. Ray was very lively, and another one that Ray didn't like. But that was the only two that were left, and so they hitched him up, and they took the double sorry, and drove them around. Well, the horses were just, you know, their ears back and nipping at each other and jerking their heads around, and they jerked the line, one of them, out of May's hand. Now, what can you do with rambunctious horses with only one line? Well, all she could do was pray. Here she had these old Grandma Wessels and the young folks and Grandma White in the carriage, and now she couldn't control the horses. And worse than that, here they came to a steep place where the road went down and across a bridge that had no siding, just boards. And then it went up on the other side. And she says, how we ever navigate that? And she picked the whole bunch of them down in the river. But she prayed, and the horses went pretty fast down, and they crossed that just perfectly. And going up on the other side, it was pretty steep, and they slowed down. And she was able to reach down and get the other line. But that scared her good. She didn't like driving after that. It was quite a shock to her, you know. But she surely was thankful. Praise the Lord.
Can I make an announcement here?
Yes.
We didn't realize it, but some of the folk were going to have to use this auditorium because of another class not being able to go to another room. And I just want to let you know that someone else just came in and announced that the finance class has been canceled, and so that we can continue here if you would like. All right.
I think sitting down. So, this Wessel family was with them, and this May was cooking the meals and housing the guests, and was quite busy with a family of two children and an old lady and a couple. And so after dinner one day, it was pretty warm, and so she said, well, I'll rest a few minutes out on the porch. So she sat down out on the porch, and here came Willie White and sat down by her. And he proposed to her right out of a clear sky. Oh, my, she said, why, so-and-so likes you. He says, I know. Well, she said, I'll have to think about it and pray about it. Well, he said, that's right, you should. We'll give you time. So she didn't know what to think. You know how girls talk between themselves? She just told her friends that if she ever married, she would never marry a widower or a minister. And W.C. White was both a minister and a widower. So there had to be some adjusting to her thinking. And besides, she liked somebody else. So she prayed about it, and it was quite out of a clear sky to her. She didn't think of anything like that. Besides, he had two girls. One was 15 and the other about 9. That's quite something to take on, you know. She'd never seen them. But she prayed about it. And she prayed about 4 definite things. Now, Lord, if you want me to marry W.C. White, let's this and this and this and this happen. Well, grandmother would be sitting in front of her, May brushing her hair. She'd say, well, May, have you decided? Have you made your decision? No, not yet. She hadn't. Well, that's all right. Then she'd wait a few more days and she'd ask her again. No, not yet. Well, finally one evening she said, yes, I've decided to marry him. So Grandma right away got a seamstress, came in, and she made her 4 lovely outfits, clothes and a wedding dress for May, because her mother was dead, had died. Since they'd become Adventists, her mother had died of tuberculosis. And so now they sent for the girls. The girls had never seen this new mother. May had never seen the girls. I often wonder how they think. I don't know how I would take a program like that. Anyway, the same Palmers, I think, were coming to Australia that I told... No, I told the other group about the Palmers. Anyway, they came with these Palmers on the boat to Australia, and they had a wonderful time coming over. But when they got there... My father and grandmother were in Tasmania for the wedding. So grandmother didn't want them to land and not have somebody to meet them, and so she had a lady, just show how thoughtful she was, a lady that had a teenager come and stay in the house, and another teen girl about Mabel's age to stay, so that when the girls came, they would each have a companion. Now, wasn't that thoughtful? Yes. But, of course, they were gone down Tasmania. That's a terrible rough trip in that Tasman. What is it? What do they call it in there? The water's very rough. Anyway, that doesn't matter. So when they came back from the wedding, here were the two new girls. And they were very happy. They got along nicely. They had a great time. And then when Ellen White knew that there was to be another child, she said, I hope this one will be a boy. You know, she had 2 granddaughters, no one to take the name White. I hope this will be a boy. She liked girls, but let's have a boy to take the name White. Well, when she was told that there were twin boys, you know, Ellen herself was a twin, she was delighted. She said, oh, good, good. So they named them Henry and Herbert after their 2 boys that she lost. I guess they used to do it that way then. Then it goes nicely together, Henry and Herbert. And were they lively little fellows. And grandmother did a lot of welfare work in those days, and she had built in back of the... Now, you know what a dashboard is in a wagon? A little 2 seats for these 2 little boys. And she'd take them with her. And the lines went over their heads, you know, over their shoulders. And they'd hold the lines. They think they were driving, but of course, Mom or Daddy had the lines back of them. But that, she enjoyed taking them out with her. And then, we, as I said, lived across, I don't know what I told you, across the street. We didn't live in the same house. And the little fellas knew about what time Grandmother would come out. She would write for certain hours, and then she'd come out for a little walk in the garden. And they'd press their little noses against the glass, and the minute they'd see her come out the door, they'd rush across the street. No automobiles, you know, so there wasn't dangerous. And she'd take one in one hand and one in the other, and they'd go through the garden. Whoops. They'd see if the peaches were getting ripe or if there was any melons. And she enjoyed that little time with them very much. They were just something special, the twin boys. Then 4 years later, I was born. Came on the scene of action. And I just did get in Australia. I don't remember anything about it. But I heard lots of it. Lots of Australia. And I still hope, the Lord willing, that I'll get to see Australia. My husband's been there twice, but I haven't. So we may go. I don't know. If we keep well enough. Time lasts. Because if the Lord comes, that's better. So then we came here. And I learned to walk at Elms Haven. We were in Elms Haven just a couple of weeks after we landed. It was all ready. The Lord had it prepared. Everything she needed. Dishes and linen and horses and carriages and even canned fruit in the basement. Everything she needed. We just moved in and started housekeeping there. And I learned to walk at Elms Haven. And I feel very much at home there. I had no idea I'd spend my old age at Elms Haven. But it's turned out that way and I enjoy every minute of it. When I was about, was I 7 or 8? Oh, you wouldn't remember. Arthur was born, the one that's in Washington, D.C. I think he's 7 years younger than I am, something like that. And so we had a good time together. And then when I was 14, this little boy was born. And you know what? I'd been praying for a sister and all I got was brothers. But I thought brothers were pretty nice. I'm very fond of my brothers. We had a wonderful time. I miss the twins. I thought, well, wish we could always live together, the twins and I. Even though they were 4 years older than I, they wanted me with them. And we had such fun together. We just had a wonderful time. There, out in the country, we each had bicycles, we made boats, we did all kinds of things. Learned to garden, learned to do all kinds of interesting things in the garden and around the place. And it was wonderful. And I loved life, and I still do, and I hope it isn't wrong to love life.
I'm sorry about that, but I'm not used to strings. No strings on me.
How'd you like to have lived in that house? Fantastic. Isn't she a jewel? Bless her little heart. And I guess she must have taken after Ellen White. They tell us that Ellen White was just as warm and kind and happy. I remember, well, I guess we better not tell any more stories, but maybe in some of our other class periods. But we want to express our appreciation to Sister Jacque for her kindness in coming to present this to us. Maybe we ought to have her up here again. bless her heart. Any of you that haven't visited Elms Haven, I'm sure that you want to do that. Incidentally, her husband is down there at Elms Haven with her, and he was an Adventist minister for a number of years, and then, as I understand it, he told me that he went and took...
In Russia.
He was an Adventist minister in Russia. Later, he went and took medicine at Loma Linda Medical School and became a physician and practiced as a physician in various parts of the world, and then later went back to preaching again. Isn't that right? So they've had a wonderfully interesting life, to say the least. Now, we did want to open it up for questions, inasmuch as the class has been canceled, and if you would like to ask some questions, maybe we could have Sister Jacque go ahead and answer them. Yes? How old was the oldest boy when he died? About 16. Yes.
He told us the other day, when Mrs. White passed away, that one of the very compassionate—I don't know if it was the daughter, Mabel was it—who helped Mr. White wife had, and you had to go out and hang up his clothes.
Can you talk a little bit louder?
Oh, you'll have to relay it. I forgot. All right. My hearing aid. I'm sorry. I'm getting old.
The question has to do with a little story that you had mentioned on an Elm Haven, apparently, of when Ellen White passed away and someone was holding her hand.
Yes, I'd like to tell you about that.
Hold it.
All right.
Let's not tumble over it again.
Yeah.
When Ellen White broke her hip, she didn't fall down the stairs. Some people think, did she fall down the stairs? No. She was an independent little person and did not wake anyone else up when she got up. And this Sabbath morning, she got up before anyone else, and going from the bathroom to her writing room, the doctors think she turned too quickly, and you know when you get old, your bones get brittle, and they think it cracked and caused the fall. She wasn't one to stumble around. She had no difficulty going up and down the stairs. The Lord blessed her with good health, and she had, no trouble going up and down the stairs. But she must have turned too quickly, and the bone cracked, and we found her on the floor Sabbath morning. Now, how long she'd been there, nobody knows. But they did not pin it. They took her to the hospital and x-rayed, but I don't know why they didn't pin it. Now, my mother lived to be 96, and she had a pin in her hip for 25 years, but they didn't pin grandmother's hip. I don't know why. And she'd been so active. And then have to lie so still. She didn't die of pneumonia, but she just wilted. You know, every time they moved her, that bone grated, and it's hard to move somebody when something hurts every time you move them. We put her in the wheelchair, took her out on the balcony, but not enough exercise. But she had finished Prophets and Kings, and when she put down her pen from doing that last book, she felt she had accomplished what the Lord wanted her to do. And she put down the pen with great satisfaction. You know, when you know you've done what the Lord wants you to do, is satisfaction. So she put her pen down with great satisfaction. Now, her hand, as a young child, trembled. But it did not tremble. If you look at her handwriting, the Lord promised to sustain her. And I heard her say, all these years, the Lord has steadied this faithful right hand. Now, don't misunderstand me. The Lord did not hold it, but it gave her nervous energy. And you look at the writing. She wrote fast. The T's are just streaks in some of the letters. She wrote rapidly, very rapidly. Well, that hand wrote 100,000 pages, long hand. And when she was failing, they sent her my sister Mabel, the one that liked to ride Ray. And she was a very comfortable person. Now, the older daughter was a sweetheart, but she was very restless, you know, not so quiet, not so calm. And Mabel, we were standing around the bed. They put the bed by the fireplace. There's no fireplace in July anyway. They put the bed, had been in the corner of the hospital bed, over in front of the fireplace, and we stood around. She was unconscious, breathing just slower and slower. Previous to this, she had said, I know in whom I believe. She said nothing the last few hours. She was unconscious. But you know, it's comforting to hold somebody's hand. In fact, my brother Arthur used to say to Mother, hand, Mama, hand. And they had to bring his little bed over close to her so she could hold his hand so he could sleep. Well, this Mabel, who is so comforting and calm, took that right hand that had written so many pages and held it until Grandmother stopped breathing. And I thought that was nice that she could do that. But I was around, not when she died, I was sorry. We were all there. Of course, it didn't make it, I suppose she didn't come to anyway. But it was Friday, and Mother had washed the clothes for my brother Francis, but they weren't dry, they weren't hung out, and we didn't have dryers in those days. And not knowing how long Grandmother would live, my mother said to me, Grace, would you go and hang out the baby's clothes? I said, well, yes, I'd do that. And while I was hanging them out, Grandmother stopped breathing. I remember they came up and they said, well, she's gone. And I thought, oh, my, I'm sorry, I wasn't there. But I was doing what I was asked to do, and that's what we were trained to do, you know. So I did my little part. The verse says she has done what she could.
Watch that table.
Let's not kick anything over.
All right, are there other questions now that you'd like to ask? Yes. Yes. The question is about Ellen's twin sister, Elizabeth.
Oh, yes.
Wasn't that her name, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth died much sooner than Ellen White. We never saw her at all, we grandchildren. She was in the East, and we were here and there. And she became an Adventist under William Miller's preaching with the whole family. The whole family were disfellowshipped. They're Methodist Episcopals. And when they would talk about Jesus coming and salvation through Jesus Christ, the minister would say, "We're saved through Methodism, sister, through Methodism." Well, and then they talked about Christ's second coming. They didn't like that. So they said, "Please don't talk about it." But they couldn't keep from it. And so they were disfellowshipped. The only reason was because they couldn't refrain from talking about the second coming of Christ. So the whole family were disfellowshipped.
Including Elizabeth.
Including Elizabeth.
And
all of them.
Can you tell a little bit more about Elizabeth?
Well,
as a twin sister.
Ellen doesn't say too much about her twin sister. However, they kept up quite a correspondence all through the years. And you know, in the first 2 years after the disappointment, they did not keep the Sabbath. And Ellen's first visions were given to her when she was not a Sabbath keeper. They knew the Lord had led them. Elizabeth did not see the Sabbath, neither did William Miller. They just didn't see the importance of the Sabbath. They felt the Lord had led them, and, well, she just didn't comprehend it. Our minds don't always see the things as we should. So that has puzzled some people, but the Lord does not force. He gives us chance to know, and we hope, in fact, Ellen White says the angels are watching William Miller's grave.
Right.
So we hope that... Oh, and her brothers did accept the Sabbath, and so did her parents, both the Harmons. And there were how many other girls? Four or five, I guess. Six girls altogether and two boys. And what a surprise to have the last two twins.
That happened in our family, too. And... my brother and I having been the last of 10 children. You remember Ellen White said of William Miller, even though he had never accepted the Sabbath truth, there were some that would like to have kept him from the truth, and Ellen said, "The Lord has hid him in the grave to protect him from those who would keep him from the truth. And the day will come when he'll be raised and will be in the kingdom." Question way back here. Question was, have you ever met Jan Loughborough, and what was he like? You can just go ahead and be seated right there. They can hear you.
Yes, I knew him very well. When I was a teenager going to camp meeting, he used to speak, and he used big charts, and he was a little bit of fellow, a little short fellow, white hair, blue eyes. He would have a long, long pointer, and he had big, big charts of the signs in the heavens. My, how we enjoyed seeing those pictures that he showed us. We wondered, what's next? And he put his little poker under and turned it over. And then there was another big picture. And it was during the Civil War, there was quite a few signs in the sky of war and battle. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so he showed us those things. And then there were signs of rainbows and the sun and things like that. Mm-hmm. All kinds of different signs in the sky that he had and showed to us. Then when he got older, he was at the sanitarium, and our home is just at the foot of the hill from St. David's Sanitarium. So we saw him quite often, and he's buried there in St. David's.
Oh, he is.
Mm-hmm. A wonderful man.
All right, next question.
I wonder if she attended
the question was, did you attend Ellen White's funeral in Battle Creek and other members of the family there?
We children did not go. My father went, but we did not go. We stayed home with mother, and we went to the funeral. It was right on the lawn there at Elm Haven. The casket was from the fireplace downstairs. They came in the front door and went out the side porch, and it took 2 hours. Then there was a camp meeting in Richmond, and they said, won't you please have the service here? And much to my discomfort and dislike, they had a funeral service there, and I thought, that isn't right to make us sit in front of all those hundreds of people when we feel so sorry.
Actually, the funeral, of course, in Battle Creek was a unique situation. It was at the Tabernacle, the old Diamond Tabernacle. And as you know, that tabernacle seated a large number of people. And there were over 4,000 people in the tabernacle that day for the funeral of Ellen White. And the community itself, out of respect, we understand, even closed their shops and lined the streets as her casket was taken from the tabernacle down to the cemetery where she rests today. Yes, next question. How old were you when Ellen White died?
I was 15 years old.
15. 15 years of age. If you're trying to figure out her age. All right. She's a spry one. I hope I've got as many gray hairs as she has, but I hope I'm as spry as she is when I get to be her age. Which
well,
is
we
all
got gray hairs.
Years.
The gray hairs don't make you old.
Yeah. Yes.
Who was Frank E. Belden's mother?
Help, Frank E. Belden's mother. Do you know?
I don't know.
She doesn't. A nephew of Sister White? Is that true? I don't know. She thinks so.
Belden. Oh, one of her sisters married a Belden.
Yeah, one of her sisters married a Belden.
But that makes sense.
Apparently not. No. Other questions? Yes. Other questions?
That's enough.
Sister, there is one more. Oh, I'm sure you do, about the film, Yes, I Remember Ellen White.
What did she ask about it?
She wanted to know if you knew about the film, or acquainted with it.
Well, it took about 4 days to
take it. You're in it. the question is, do you show that film at Ellen Baker?
No,
no,
we don't have it.
However, we have made a request of the Northern California Conference for that to be brought to us so that we can show it here, probably on Friday, if it's available. They're searching for it. They're trying to get it to us tomorrow. So if it gets here tomorrow, well then, let's see, tomorrow's Wednesday. We'll show it Thursday if it arrives. Another elderly gentleman in the film, who was that?
Elder Lloyd and Richard, and my brother Arthur.
Okay.
If he's
all
the
right.
Elderly gentleman, I
don't. Yes. No, she mentioned a little while ago, maybe you weren't here, maybe it was in the first session, where when she was in vision, her eyes always looked as if they were looking at something in the distance, very attentively, an interesting look on her face. But no, she did not remain still. She walked around, actually, during some visions, did she not? And her movements were very graceful, as Sister Jacques mentioned earlier. However, anyone who attempted to move her arms found it absolutely impossible. They said that even strong people attempted to move her arms when she was standing in vision or sitting or whatever, and they couldn't even budge a single muscle of her body.
What would that prove to you?
Well, it certainly proved that the Lord was in full control of her body, as well as of her mind. Full control. Yes. Good question. Did you ever see Ellen White in vision?
No, and I wish I had. Just once. She had many of them faces, and I was never there.
Oh, bless your heart. All right. Is that it? Yes, I guess there's one more. This is Oh, someone else at Ellen's Haven showed these folk around. They're wondering who that was. Some lady down there.
My great niece. My oldest sister's youngest daughter.
Okay. All right. Pardon? Oh, did your niece know Ellen White?
No.
No. All right. Thank you very much. And I guess there is one further hand, but I think Sister Dot's getting tired and we need to get her back down home. Can we hold that? We'll try to get to her individually, perhaps. All right, let us stand for a moment of prayer and then we'll be dismissed. How would you like to have Sister Jacques pray for us today? Wouldn't that be just the right thing, please?
Our kind Heavenly Father, we thank you for the many blessings that we have in life. We thank thee for the beauties that are about us. We thank thee for thy love. And we pray that we may be with thee in the earth and ages. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.